everyone, and welcome back to Parenting Young Adults with Kim and Tora. I'm Kim.
I'm Tora.
And thank you for joining us again today. So on our last podcast, we said that we were going to have a discussion about race this time. And so that's what we're going to talk about. But before we do that, I want to give a little update on the ongoing saga with me getting my children's social media accounts.
Oh my God.
So I sent them a text after our last podcast. Mm-hmm. My son has not responded to that text at all. And my daughter sent me a text back saying, "Wow, Mom."
What?
So I don't know how I feel about it. On the one hand, I'm like, I really don't care. I haven't had it all this time and they're just fine.
Right.
On the other hand, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I should know. So we're going to see. I'm going to think about it and actually talk to them because I haven't had conversations with
them. Right, right.
And then we'll see. And I'll give you guys an update next time.
I think they should do it because my thing is this. If they can't, if Mom can't know, then who else should know? And I really feel like that. Now, I know they have fan-only accounts and friend-only accounts, and I blaze through those when they're on their phone. I'm like, oh, where's that video from? I've never seen that. They're like, it's my friends-only account. It's my fan. But nothing on there is really nothing on there. I have not seen or know that they do. Nothing. So I always say I'm your third eye. You know, I'm the thing that is going to keep you from, when you're my age, going, why didn't someone stop me? Or why didn't you tell me not to? Or why didn't you just make me realize that might not be the smartest thing to leave up? Like, I'm the third eye. I don't have to say that. You just automatically know I'm on the account. So you might, let me tone it down. Like,
well,
a little.
We've had a ton of conversations about what's appropriate and what's not from early teenage years. Mm-hmm. I think a part of it for me is that I grew up in an era where we were not as monitored as the kids are now.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, as we talked about, who raised me, exhibited extreme confidence in me. And mm-hmm. even though I was younger, because, you know, I left earlier, so I was younger when I was in high school than everyone else, mm-hmm. she gave me great freedom. And I think that that contributed to how I am. So I'm conflicted myself in terms of, do I want them to have the freedom to just have some things that Mom's eyes do not see, or is it more important for me to see what they're doing on there? After years of really, once they get out of high school, I really left it alone. So for Iman, it's just been, for my daughter, it's just been less than a year. For my son, it's been almost 3 years, but I'm mm-hmm. going to have an actual conversation with each of them.
And I do agree with that. I do think everybody has to have a personal life, but this social media is impersonal. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing about social media to me. Like, her godfather just became her friend on TikTok. And he said, oh my, look. And her godfather is Chris Haley, who is Alex Haley's nephew. So
okay. He's
a very public figure. And he said, oh my gosh, I'm looking at the one where the twins was out. And uh-huh. So he said, Victoria. So we were laughing. He said, oh Lord, I'm gonna have to get used to this. And he was, you know, but I'd already told him. I was like, look, this is the way they live. This is the world they live in. I might not agree with it and I might not even like it, but you know, what are we going to do? They're going to do it anyway, but at least we know about it. So it's nothing nobody can say, did you see your daughter? Did you know your daughter? Like, yeah, and you ain't telling me nothing that's going to hurt me or sidetrack me because I know.
I am going to let them weigh in and tell me what their position is, and then we'll come to some kind of decision. And I will just, you know, I can't wait. I don't really have a strong preference for actually being on there. Sometimes, mm-hmm. like even with their rooms, some stuff I really don't even want to see. You know, you're living well, you're on track, keep mm-hmm. it together. I don't really want to see it, but I'm going to talk with them and I'll keep you guys posted. We'll
Absolutely.
See how it works out.
Absolutely. I think it just moves easier in life, you know?
We shall see. Okay, so moving on to the issue of race, the topic of today. Mm-hmm. The first thing I would ask you is, how did race affect the way you raised your children?
I think in the end, it played a bigger part than it did when they were younger, because when they were younger, I didn't really want them to focus on race about anything. I wanted them to just think people were good and bad. But now that they're older and they're more exposed to stuff, raising them when they got older, race played a very big part because they were, you know, asked, were they whitewashed and, you know, were they trying to be white or were they trying to, you know, take away from their blackness? And I couldn't explain to them why people were saying that to them because that wasn't my experience in life. You know, no one ever said that to me. No one ever said my girlfriends and the people that I choose to hang out with or be friends with or socialize with, no one ever said that to me. So that was like their personal experience. And I'm like, well, don't let that sidetrack you for who you want to be with. You know, you could find a good black person that treats you like gold, or you could try find a good white person that treats you like gold. If you sit there and you put race in the, you know, forefront of it, you're going to miss out on a whole lot of opportunities. So that was my take on it. I couldn't really say, you know, that person is asking you that because they're black and they've never had experience with white people. I couldn't say that because I don't know their experience. I don't know why they were saying that. I don't know if they were saying it just because they wanted to be friends with my kids. But I do know raising them, eventually I had to bring that into some of our conversations, which was very hard for me. Mm-hmm. Very hard for me because I can walk into a room and I can be the only person, and I say of color because of the you know, hue of my skin, but I could be the only person of color in that room and not feel that at all. Not think of it, not feel uncomfortable, not wish that more black people were there. And that's because of how I was raised. I wasn't raised to see a nationality or color. I wasn't. And so when I did know about it, it was too late for me by then. I was already comfortable being around any and everybody. So
in your neighborhood growing up, it was a multicultural environment or primarily white? Yeah, I grew up
downtown Annapolis in a very, you know, I could say upscale part of downtown Annapolis. Mm-hmm. So I went to an elementary school where it was only two of us, you know, my girlfriend, and then they integrated our school our last year there, which I was about to go to middle school. So that's my take on racism. You know, that's my take on finding out about racism. I didn't even know, you know, you just have girlfriends that you grow up with, that you go over their house every day, you go on trips with them, and no one ever brings up race. They don't bring it up. My grandparents don't bring it up. And so you just go in life thinking everybody's, you know, equal. And then when you find out like there's some speed bumps that some people have put into place, so another race of people either can't move as fast or can't move as efficient, then that's when I think it makes parenting difficult. Because when you say you can't get into a certain school, like a predominantly black school, because so many of us want to go there. You know what I mean? So many of us want to go.
Saying that they can't get into a predominantly black school because so many want to go there?
Yes. Yeah, so it was more of a struggle for them trying to get into a predominantly black school than it was for them to get into the schools that they go to, which are predominantly white schools. And I found out that it was reversed when if the white kid wanted to get into like a Howard, it was easier for him. And I'm like, I could not believe that life was set up like this. Like my son actually got denied to Howard, but got into all the other colleges, you know, Arizona. What is it? What did he get into? Franklin Pierce, Penn State. I mean, he got into all of these colleges and Howard was like, no. And it wasn't until, you know, we put our foot down. I was like, no, you don't understand. He's coming from a Catholic school and you're telling him no. And they were like, that's one of the reasons, you know, he's coming from a predominantly white Catholic schools. And he now you're trying to put him into Howard. I was like, oh, well, he has to go to Howard. He needs some coaching.
Your daughters, they went to the same school my kids went to. They didn't, did they have that issue as well?
Yeah, they had the same problem. Yeah, they had the same problem. They got denied all the HB. They applied to three and all three denied them. But all the other ones off the chain got in off the bat. Great.
Like, my son goes to an HBCU and my daughter was supposed to go to an HBCU, but she actually goes to a It's a PWI, but it's, I forgot what they call it because there's a large percentage of Blacks there. So there's some other little term in between.
I remember that. I remember that term when they said that at West Virginia. I was like,
yeah, so she's going to one of those, but I would have to say that I think there came a point where my children and I talked about it and we decided that they would actually definitely go to an HBCU. So there were not a lot of applications to predominantly white institutions because I went to a predominantly white undergraduate school mm-hmm. with a very small percentage of minorities. I went to mm-hmm. the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and then I went to a predominantly white law school. And even though that worked perfectly well for me, it was my opinion that—
Was it a struggle? Fitting in?
No, because when I went to Wisconsin, as I mentioned before, I was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. So I had grown up in the inner city in a predominantly Black town, and it was a culture shock. Mm-hmm. But I think that I was so young back then that I really didn't realize the significance of everything. And I ended up becoming best friends with my white roommate who was from a little town in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We ultimately ended up getting an apartment together. I mean, and then it also made the Black people stick together more. And then I was in a sorority and eventually, you know, the Deltas. You know. Mm-hmm. And then eventually president of that. So mm-hmm. I was tight with the Black folk, it made us stick together. And then being in the sorority gave a whole nother social group. So it was fine. I think I was just a bit young to realize the significance of being in that university. There were so many dairy farmers' children and mm-hmm. all kind of people. I mean, it's a top public university. So there were, you know, academic people who had strong interest in research and this and that, all kind of people there. But I think it a little bit went over my head. College was a lot of fun. I worked hard. I had a great time. And I just don't think that that I got it. But I, looking around, I can see, I think one of the advantages of the HBCUs is the network that you develop. Just and like—
Where do you get that perspective from?
From friends of mine that have gone to HBCUs. They may have gone to HBCU for undergrad mm-hmm. and went to a PWI for grad school. Mm-hmm. Or like I have a soror who's a physician and she went to a PWI for undergrad and then she went to Howard for medical school. There's a whole social thing that goes on at the HBCUs. And then even when you're out in the world, when they see, oh, they went to my alma mater. Uh-huh. I mean, that probably works for me in terms of Wisconsin and everything too, but it's just different. It's not okay. the same as with the HBCUs. So I wanted them to have that experience. And also at this time in our history, with everything that's going on in this country, mm-hmm. I wanted them to go and be around their people in an environment that's nurturing. And that's another point. Wisconsin is a humongous university. Mm-hmm. So your lectures would have like 150 people. They don't care if you come or nobody's taking your attendance. Mm-hmm. This was my experience. It may be different now. Mm-hmm. The lectures were different from the material we learned in the books. And so it was very hands-off and you had to be dedicated and make your way. At the same time, one of my best friends from high school went to an HBCU in North Carolina. Her whole experience was different. They pull you in, there are people there to move you along. And I
nurturing, just- More nurturing?
More nurturing. That's the actual right word. More nurturing and more concerned about the outcome of your success.
I can understand so, that.
In Wisconsin, at the time that I went in the 80s, we ended up having a good dean of students with a minority retention board that he put me on. So I feel that they were trying to help me. I fortunately am a little more independent, but I just thought that the HBCUs were the way to go for them. So they targeted that. And that's—
I'm not gonna lie. I did want them to have that experience, whether they take a summer class there or summer school at Howard, because a couple of their girlfriends did go to Howard and some went to Coppin and some went to Clark in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I really was like, I love their, you know, when they post on the internet, I would be like, oh my God, that's so fun. They would go to step shows and certain things I saw my son do, but I don't get to see my daughters, you know, go through that because they go to party schools. And their schools are nothing like HBCUs. Their schools are very suburban kids that.
But they should have sororities there. Like Wisconsin wasn't like that, but we had sororities.
Yeah, my daughter did tell me they had sororities at her college. But when we were touring the college, there was in the lunchroom, there was just a table and it was a lot of Black kids sitting at the table. And I was going to go approach them. But I was hoping they approached my daughter first, like, you know, hey, she's torn, but it wasn't that. And I asked her that. I said, so once she went to the school and finally got in the school and was going to the school, I asked her, how were those kids? You know, did they come up to you? She's like, Mom, no. She said, it's weird because other kids came up to me, meaning the white kids came up to me and approached me and embraced me. She said, but my own people were just like, you know, look, we all up here struggling together. Get in where you fit in. And I was like, really?
Really?
I couldn't believe it, but that's exactly how
wow.
She said it was kind of, she said it wasn't like you would think that you say that we'd find each other. Well, she said, no, it was nothing. Now she's definitely friends with some of the Black girls there, which she loves, but she said that they were more so introduced by us. The first day of school, I was like, hey, come here, meet my daughter. You know, and so she was, and they've stayed friends throughout this, but
that's as far crazy.
As, yeah, no,
that's as far crazy. As being like a, I would think they would try to stick together a little bit.
Not at all. And I really think for the confidence, I think HBCUs give a certain confidence to especially our sisters, our daughters, that you just can't get anywhere else. I really do. I mean, we've got a vice president, you know, we got the Black Panther. We got so many positive role models, I mean, that have come out of HBCUs. I can't even give you the list that I'm proud of, you know, Thurgood Marshall. We've got so many positive role models. So I definitely wanted my children to have that type of healthy confidence because mentally, I feel like that's where you get your mental capacity to be able to withstand everything that's going on in your world.
It's a really good perspective. I have never really articulated it like that, but that may in part be why I really wanted them to go to HBCUs too. I just wanted them to be grounded in their race and culture. Yeah.
So. Grounded in their truth. That's all I've ever wanted for my children. And once I see that they get a lot of that home from me, I worried that they would be delusional. I'm not gonna lie. I worried that when they are outside of their race, now that I feel like this, I didn't always feel like this, but now that I feel like this, I feel like I don't want them to be delusional. There are separate rules, there are separate games, there are separate laws. And I really didn't know how to approach that for my children because that's an imprisonment. And I did not want my kids to be in prison minus the bars. I didn't. So that to me was the hardest thing for me to try to teach them is that you make a right turn on red without signaling and, you know, you could get pulled over. You know what I'm saying? Somebody else might do it, make a right turn on red without signaling and nothing ever happens a million and one times. But the first time you do it, you might get pulled over and it could end up bad. So I hated having that conversation, but I think when you're around your own peers, you naturally know and are intuitive to that road that's out there. And I know it now, my kids definitely know it now, but that was a hard road for me to teach. And I feel like you get that education when you do surround yourself with your own educated people.
So, you know, I'm really pro-Black. Mm-hmm. And even I shielded my children from racism for a very long time for a similar reason. I watched Roots when I was a young girl school and all of
born
that.
Us all.
To be honest, I feel that kind of knowledge of race at a young age makes you feel differently about yourself. Just the mere fact that people were able to do those kinds of things to people who looked like you. Mm-hmm. So for a really long time, I shielded them from, we didn't talk about slavery. We didn't talk about all that because that's not our history. That's not our reality. We're not in it. And we didn't talk about it. And I imagine they hid it in Black History Month for, you know, or whatever, but I didn't have a lot of conversations with my children about that. And then when they were both in high school, I took them to see 12 Years a Slave, or no, the one with Nat Turner.
The one that
they hated it, and he got killed, and everybody got killed, and they were, and so and so then I started looking up. There were so many successful slave rebellions that I started looking them up and texting them to them to say,
"Birth of a Nation."
Yes, and because I'm saying, I don't want you to think that resistance always ends in defeat.
Right.
Here's this person who did, but I just felt that even that was a little bit of a botched thing because it didn't teach what I wanted. But what I wanted to teach them was be aware that this happened in our history so that when things are happening, you make sure you don't let it happen again. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to be aware at that point, but it was a little botched because my son just looked at me like, oh, all these people just got murdered.
What pride am I supposed to feel about this, Mom? Absolutely. Now, see, that's funny you said that because I taught my children from the start. And only reason why is because I remember when I looked at a globe in elementary school, I always had a fascination for Egypt. From the first time I saw Elizabeth Taylor play Cleopatra, I had an obsession, right? But it never made sense to me. So I don't know what the gift God gave me, but I always pictured a Black woman as her.
Yeah, because that
I always did. I don't know why, even as a kid, and not just a Black woman, but just a woman of my color being there. You know, looking elegant. I don't know why. I don't know if it was a birdie that whispered in my ear as an infant or whatever, but I always did. So all those movies, just I pictured us, okay? So when my son started growing up, I gave him that knowledge. I started saying, well, you know, Egypt is hot and, you know, a lot of people couldn't really live there. So maybe the history got distorted. So he immediately dove into our history feeling like Egypt was, you know, our thing. And
let's take a short sponsor break. Now back to the current episode.
Then some years later, I looked at a globe and Egypt was in Africa, but it wasn't in Africa when I looked at it in elementary school. And I'll never forget that.
Because you know it's always been in Africa, even though they try
always to- been in Africa. But when I was in grade school, Egypt was not on our globe. And so I couldn't wait to buy a globe. And I bought the biggest one we could find. And I circled it. And we still have it. And I've always showed my children from when they were... Egypt is in Africa. You know, Egypt is in Africa. We are kings. We are queens. And I always call them kings and queens. And I text them king and queen. And I always like, you know, let them know we are from royalty. Like, I feel it in our blood. I'm sorry. Call me uppity. You say whatever you want about me. We were birthed in royalty. And I've always installed that in them. And I've never started our history with slavery. Ever.
Well, you know, I talked to Africa, to them about Africa. I've been to Africa. So we were living here and I had to get people to watch them when I left and went to the continent.
What?
So they know about that. I'm like so pro-Black. They know about all that. But I just held back the news of slavery. And it's so interesting because for the reason I said, but it's so interesting what you said about Egypt not being in Africa.
Broke my heart.
The other big distortion is that the continent of Africa is apparently as big as all the other continents combined, but when they write it on the globe, they distort it. So we never see it that way. So
I'm okay with it now. I'm okay now that I don't listen anymore. I'm okay. You know, they say believe half of what you see and nothing of what you hear. I'm so okay with it because even now they're saying they're finding artifacts that are rewriting the history, but they're not rewriting it the correct way again. It's like, no, you can't keep going this route. The common sense doesn't make, like, I can sit on the beach all day and my skin won't peel or burn. Stop it.
And you know what? I saw a meme recently that says, stop digging up our archaeologists made a new find. They were like, stop digging up our ancestors and let them rest in peace. Stop digging them up. You don't need
to. It can't be like that, because now that the truth is out, I think there's a power that be that's trying to say, but where are we? And you're not there because you weren't there.
Right.
You weren't part of that. I don't know what part you were. I'm only talking about the part where I know of Africa. You weren't part of that. It's no way you could be. You know, everybody can move wherever you want. You can settle wherever you want. You can migrate. You can discover. You can do whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you can't be a part of African history in that way. Not in a royalty way. Not in royalty.
So what views do your children have on race now, given the way that they were raised and the experiences that they had?
And the way that they were raised and the way that they handle it is they go through life feeling only like they want to be happy. So both of my kids, I don't like saying date outside their race, because it's not outside, because we are all...
And they date white men?
Yes, my kids do, and my son has.
Sunday's white men?
My son has dated... Caucasian women, Asian women, Armenian women. He's dated everybody. He's a very rainbow guy. I mean, he likes all women. And my daughters have too. They're Spanish, Caucasian. But the one thing I love about them, they take their pride with them. So I'll say that without saying a race to it. But they take their pride with them, which I'm amazed by. And I feel like when I see people like Kamala Harris and I see other women where they take their pride with them, I'm like, I see what you're doing. You know, I understand. I know I've definitely dated, other race, but I don't know if I took my pride with me. I think I did it because that's who I was around. I didn't know anyone else. There weren't any black men around at the time. They weren't any interested in me. But I don't feel like I took my race with me. I felt like I just was a person. But my kids make a statement about it. You know, it shocks me sometimes. I'm like,
well, that's actually really good. You know, given the way that I am, I'm always on and on about black love, and that's how we perpetuate the black race. So my children to date have only dated within the race.
Mm-hmm.
But
I hear Dr. Umar say that a lot. Like, you can't be a supportive of the culture if you're
Dr. Umar.
Yeah, you know, he's
he can't tell you what you can do. Everybody's a different position.
Yeah, he's a really pro-black, and he
so am I.
Should I say pro-black or should I say militant black? Because I think we all who are prideful of our race can be considered pro-black. What do you think?
Well, I think
I'm not militant in the least form. Well, I'm not.
This is my answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and my intro ends with the words flashing up blacks only. And I have an introductory video where I explain why the channel's for blacks only, mm-hmm. because it's about us.
Is it for blacks only, or do you say that because if you don't want to be insulted or you don't want the knowledge, then this is not the platform for you?
No, when I created it, which was just a few months ago, was for blacks only. And I came on there and I did a big thing about how if any white people came on there, I was going to boot them out of the community, mm-hmm. because it's for blacks, because all around the globe, we're at the bottom of the totem pole and we need to get our act together. Mm-hmm. And once we do, then we can work with some other people. But of course, from the beginning, everybody was telling me that you shouldn't do that. And so recently, I just recorded another episode this weekend, which mm-hmm. I haven't posted yet, mm-hmm. saying I've kind of softened my stance. I'm mm-hmm. still B1. I'm still black first. But, you know, I've known so many cool black white men and women. And it's just...
But not only that, they have to be educated with our pro-blackness. They have to be. So if they come to your site and you're speaking your truth and they hear what you feel and they see what you feel... That's educating them. It's letting them, like when they saw, what is her name, Amanda? The one that did the poem?
Poet Laureate, yeah.
Gordon, when they saw her, I couldn't get enough of hearing Anderson Cooper and all the great commentators, all of them that were just swearing by her words and saying how the, you know, the world was so beautiful having people like her in it. And I feel like when we don't talk to them in that way, that they don't become educated. Like everything your grandfather and your great grandfather and your grandmother and your great grandmother and your mother and father taught you, it's all lies. So come over here, listen to what I'm saying. Hear what I'm saying in my rawest voice. You might be uncomfortable, it might make you upset, but you will hear where I got this from the way I've been treated, the way I've been looked at, the way I've been talked to, the opportunities I've missed out on. I need you to come over here and listen to this and be educated so you don't teach yours to do this, because it's all taught. It's all taught. Racism is all taught.
But I don't think it's our job to teach them anything. And I mean, I really was serious when I said that all across the globe, we're at the bottom of the totem pole. Mm-hmm. That's in America, that's in UK, mm-hmm. that's in Brazil.
But we're scholars by nature.
Huh?
Black people are scholars by nature.
Right, but right
educators now, and scholars by nature.
We right now, we are economically oppressed. We mm-hmm. are socially oppressed. We're at the bottom of the totem pole in mm-hmm. all areas that count in every country, mm-hmm. on every continent, mm-hmm. even on the continent of Africa. Mm-hmm. And so to me, and this is the thing, I think that there are a lot of roles that a lot of different people need to play. But the role I intended to fill mm-hmm. is to talk to my people mm-hmm. and get us together to break the spiritual warfare and the programming that has been instilled in us.
So spiritual warfare, talk about that.
So that we can come together and raise our status mm-hmm. all across the globe. And that has nothing to do with white people. For example, I learned that in Brazil, Black people have historically hated themselves and have participated in a program to whiten their families within two generations. White people can't help us fix that. That's a mental programming thing that we need to work on. So I wanted to address all those kinds of things, but mm-hmm. I just think that it's mean-spirited. It wasn't my intent to be mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. It was my intent to say,
education.
Put our oxygen mask on ourselves first.
Right. Right.
Then we'll relate to you only for this channel. Because I
with that same scenario, putting the oxygen mask on ourselves first, they can watch us do it, see how we do it, and understand why we're doing it, and learn that way.
How does your husband feel about the racial issues and your daughters dating and your children dating non-Blacks and all of that? Is he on a page with you?
Well, I believe that he doesn't say anything at all because he wants to go along to get along. Okay. So he doesn't say anything, not about, you know, why don't you, you know, see a nice young Black man. You can't find a, he doesn't say anything. He's more so just, if they're safe and the person is treating them right and they're treating them, you know, with dignity and respect, then he's all for it.
Okay.
You know, and I think he wants to just try, like I say, to go along, to get along, to fit in, because he doesn't have anything. He doesn't say anything at all about it. Now, other people around him, he's got male friends that'll say stuff like, do they date Black men? Or do they even, have they ever dated?
How does he respond to that sort of thing?
I've heard him say, you know, pretty much they date whoever they want, you know, I don't care. As long as
they way to think about
it. You know, he said a typical thing, as long as anybody putting their hands on them.
Mm-hmm. If you can be that detached about it, is not a bad way to think about mm-hmm. it.
And I think that's a good word. I think he's very detached when it comes to, I think he'd much rather not even see them in a dating setting.
Well, most fathers are that way.
Right. I think he'd much rather just picture like they're not even dating than even put the concept in his brain that
I think it's too difficult for us to be that detached. I mean, I definitely have an opinion. I'm mm-hmm. not, you know, but I don't want to, I don't want to thwart them. You know, I want them to do what they want to do. It just so happens that they date Black people too, and that works really well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But if they came home with somebody else, you know, I want to be in my kids' life. And I think that when you take, some people have taken those positions up, absolutely not, then you lose out because, for one, you're pushing them exactly to the people you're trying to keep them from. And then for two, they resent you for that. So I'm just glad they're into Black love right now. And if it ever changes, I'll I'll deal with it for
right.
sure.
Right. And you always want to see what's going on in your kid's life, because that person, no matter what race they are, could be treating them bad. And if they're not coming around because of the, you know, color of their skin, and they're treating them bad, you can't see that. You can't help them. You can't. So my thing is this, I'd rather keep all my kids, you know, male friends close, you know, no matter what race they are, just so I know, okay, my baby's being treated right by whoever, you know what I'm saying? And even with my son, you know, I'd much rather him be with someone that's making him happy, treating him right, because if they weren't, and he comes around looking all stressed and crazy, and I'm like, what's going on? I can't offer my opinion, you know, no matter what, because he's staying away from me because he worried about, you know, bringing that person around me. So I'd like to keep that door open always.
Okay, well, that's a good perspective to have.
Yep.
Do you have other questions about race that you wanted to bring out today?
Mentally.
Okay.
The mental aspect of racism, is it taking a toll on us, on them? I haven't checked in with my kids with that. And when we have had little conversations about it, they handle it pretty well. But okay. Mentally, I'm abused. I have post-trauma. Yeah.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, post-traumatic stress disorder. I feel like for the last 4 years, I don't think I've been doing too well with this thing. Like, I blocked so many people on social media because I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know about it. I hate it. And just seeing all the shootings and the killings of, you know, young African-American men. And I hate the flip-flop of, well, y'all kill each other and y'all call each other out each other's name.
Other races kill each other too.
Right. And I hate hearing that and then saying, making it feel like, oh, it's okay for our young African-American women and men to be shot dead with a cell phone, because of a cell phone, or because we, you know, sitting in our car asleep, or, you know, I'm messed up. And when I say I'm messed up, I know I'm messed up because I block it. I don't want to address it. I block it.
I have not watched one murder. I refuse to be
George Floyd. Normalized. You haven't seen George Floyd either?
No, I refuse to normalize the murder.
How did you not see that? It was in your face everywhere.
Because for one thing, I really don't watch the news that much. I research to learn. And a lot of stuff, like, I don't really need to know every rape, robbery, and murder in Detroit and Wyoming. They just put all that negative stuff on there. I don't know anybody over there. And if it's somebody I know, people are going to let me know. So I don't watch it. And number two, with George Floyd, once I saw that man with his knee on that man's neck, and it didn't change. Well, it didn't change. So I stopped looking, because things like that just are so traumatic looking to me. So I stopped looking because it just looked like nothing good was going to come of it. And then I started seeing on social media that he had died, they had killed. And I said, thank God I didn't watch it. I'm not watching anybody get shot in the back. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see Black people being murdered. I don't want to be desensitized. And I do talk to my kids about it too.
Good way to look at it, desensitized. I mean,
because every week they were just showing Black people getting shot. I was like, well, you know, I can't have that be a part of my psyche. And I'm not gonna watch.
Yeah, and that's where I think I'm mentally abused.
I think that you would be having PTSD from seeing so many Black people. It was like just one after, there's a long list of names of people that have been murdered.
Do you feel like you owe it to them, to owe it to the victim and the family to suffer with them? Because that's what I found myself feeling.
I don't feel that. And I also feel I am very much about the spiritual warfare and the programming. And I also feel that that's a form of programming.
Can you elaborate on the spiritual warfare part of it, especially spiritual part?
We will have to have another conversation about that, because it's a big construct that they have used against us. It's a part of white supremacy, and that's why we're at the bottom everywhere. And it becomes a part of our mindset, like that thing I was telling you about Brazil. It becomes a part of the way Black people think. So then you don't even have to victimize us anymore. We've ingrained it, and we're doing it ourselves. So that's why I wouldn't watch that, because to me, it was too frequent, too coincidental that all of a sudden every week somebody's got to get killed by a cop. It seems to me that you're trying.
Do you think it was always happening, but now that we got cell phones, we see it more? Or do you think it was definitely people were on a roll? Like, let's take advantage of this opportunity to hurt someone and kill someone. And we know that it will be like nothing, like a slap on the wrist.
I think it was both. I think that it has always been happening. I think that when we look back to gangster rap and stuff from the West Coast, they were talking about the police brutality. I think that we learned that the Black Panther was created to protect people from police brutality in Oakland. So I think it was always happening, but and we just didn't know it because the world wasn't as connected as it is now.
We didn't hear it, we didn't see it, so we didn't know it. I get it.
So we didn't, we didn't see the all those instances, but Black people knew. When you talk to the older Black folk, they always knew. I saw a sign from, I had posted it on Instagram from like 50 years ago saying, stop the police brutality of Black people. And it was Black people with the sign. So it was the same.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis holding up a sign about how the government is, you know, doing stuff and after us. And I have it actually saved in my phone. I'll send it to you. But I have them with the picture and a sign. And my daughter just asked me last night. That's why it was, she's like, Mom, who are these people? And I said, you don't know who they are and you want to be an actress. That's Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. You need to know them. They were part of the struggle. They were great actors and activists. And when you read the sign, it's like, it's still going on today. And they were
just
young.
Like, to be relevant to, and they're both, is Ruby Davis still alive?
Ruby has passed on.
She has passed on too, but Ossie, I know, had passed on before her. And yeah, it's been going on a long time, but I also think that recently it was some kind of agenda to show us, I mean, just every time you turn around. Then when it got to Breonna Taylor and she was in her own house and that other guy whose family hugged the murderer, it started being even in your own home. It felt like an agenda to me. So I think it was a little bit of both, but I mean, it's hard to avoid, and your kids are seeing it. My kids saw that. The people are talking about it. I know they felt a way. I've tried to talk to them as much as possible. And, you know, we can't really shield them from what's really happening. So it just gets difficult.
And you don't want them to feel like they're a number. And that's one thing that I was always worried about. That's one thing that put me in a mental stupor, is that I didn't want my kids thinking, am I a number? You know, am I a number? Because it seems like that's all it is everybody numbers getting cold. And I always wanted to know, do you have the right tools to come home? You know, do you have the right tools, or does that even matter anymore?
Some of it's blessing, do you think? Some of it's just not getting stopped, not having things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a really tough situation. You can give them, it seems to me that there are times when having the right tools will save the day, but there are other times when, no matter, based on the stuff they showed and talked about, no matter what you did, it just was not going to be a good result.
Well, for my last thing that's been picking at me, I want to know, do you think financially, being rich, being poor, being middle class, do you think that holds any weight of avoiding any of this? Because this topic tonight we're on is about race. Do you think your financial background could help eliminate, help, you know, progress you into a better life for you, for your family, for your whole family? Or do you think it's just the luck of the draw?
I think that, I mean, I never really thought about it, but it just pops out to me in my mind. I think that your socioeconomic status does, can, not does, but can insulate you from some of those issues, because depending on where you live, you're going to come up against a different kind of environment. Over here where I am, they're not going to just be stopping you. There are a lot of affluent Blacks. That's what we're used to here. That's what this county is all about. They're not going to harass you. If you're in the inner city and you're living in the projects or something, you're gonna get harassed more. I do think it insulates you some. Mm-hmm. I think that for the suburban, you know, we have all the suburban kids that just mm-hmm. wanna be a real, well, you're not gonna be insulated because you're throwing yourself into environments where there's a different thing going on. And then I also think there's some just luck of the draw. If you're going to a concert, to the gas station, taking a road trip out of town. I mean, you know, you got to be blessed just to avoid that, you know?
And I had my two situations that happened where I was, when I was younger, we had a record company and I was picking up some people from the projects.
Let's take a short sponsor break. Now back to the current episode.
And there were four men. I was picking up four guys, young guys. I should never call them men. They were young men. And I was taking them to the studio. And we got pulled over and they had guns drawn. They asked me to step outside of the car and I stepped out of this car and then I'm smiling, thinking what the heck, you know, I'm thinking it's a joke. In my mind, I literally thought it was a joke.
It's a long time ago. This was a long time ago.
Oh, this was a long time ago. This was over my, this is way over 20 years ago because my daughter's 20. So this is way over 20 years ago. And I get out the car and I was like, is everything all right? They were like, yeah, we got a call that, you know, this was, you had drugs in the car. And I was like, no, we're going to the studio. I said, they are rappers and I'm taking them to a studio. And I like, you know, reached down, pulled my card out. And I was like, yeah, this is the studio I'm taking them to. In Laurel, and they were like, oh, well, we heard that this was a drug deal. I said, I don't know anything about that. They don't do anything dealing with drugs. I was like, I know all of them personally. So the lady cop, she comes over to me. She goes, I went to school with you. And I was like, you did? She's like, yeah, my name is so-and-so. And I was like, oh my God, I do remember you. And I said, no, we went to school together by default. I said, but you and your brother and I were in the same grade. She's like, oh my God. So we started talking. She's like, okay. She gave my license. I'm like, okay, she's fine. So we left. So when I got in the car and they were like, oh my God, they were all nervous. I was like, what's wrong? Why are y'all acting like can't even go to school? I don't even know if I'm going to think of my lyrics. And they were distraught. Because and I was just, could not believe it.
Because of the kinds of
the police never even looked at them, said anything to them. I don't know. They just thought that whatever was going to happen next, because they surrounded the car. It was like six cops surrounded the cars with their guns drawn, asked me to get out. And I was talking. They were like, well, what did they say? I was like, they just asked me, did I know you all? And why was I, you know, down in your neighborhood? And I told them I was picking you up. I pick y'all up every week to bring you to the studio. And I, in my mind, because this is, like I said, oblivious Torah. But now I get it. Now that I've seen, the internet has taught me, I've seen so much, I get it. I was literally ignorant back then.
And so you know that in this day and time, okay, you reaching for that card?
All of that.
It's different now.
All of that. I think of all of that, and that's why I get mentally messed up.
I think race is a really complicated topic in the world and in America in particular.
Oh yeah.
And I would be thrilled to hear what other people think, what their take is on the things that we've discussed. And I imagine that we will definitely circle back around to race again, because it comes up.
It comes up and it's a part of our culture, our life. I pray it goes away, but as we know, it doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon.
No, it doesn't.
Not in the near future. So no. Definitely would love to, you know, have more topics where we can bring other opinions in and have other people tell us how did they handle a situation that they felt like, you know, they got out of safely, but hope that their children can handle it the same way. You know, I would love to hear more examples of that, because like I said, one was over 20 years ago, and I think of now, I would have been done. Yeah. I would have been done.
Race is always going on, and so we'll definitely come back around to it again, and if anyone would like to leave comments or share any information about how they dealt with these kinds of things, we'd love to hear it.
I definitely would, and I appreciate everything, the openness, the honesty. I cannot wait to have more topics that we are eager to discuss with everyone. So
absolutely.
May we have a great night.
Yes.
Great day tomorrow.
Thank you all for joining us. And Torah will be back next time.